Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschita De Chitarane. Today is Radhastami, the appearance day of Srimati Radharani. On Janmashtami, I said that that day was perhaps the most important day on the Vaishnava calendar. But the same thing can be said of Radhastami. To start by reading an excerpt of a lecture by Prabhupada that he gave at Mayapur in March 1975. He said, if you don't go through Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it will be very difficult to understand Radha Krishna. That is practical. Just like you young boys and girls from Western countries, you have taken up Krishna so seriously. Why? Because we are trying to understand Krishna through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should follow this principle. There will be no difficulty to understand Krishna. And I want to read a verse from something called Guru Parampara. It's a song by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And it describes the Guru Parampara. Text 6 is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Sri Radha Krishna. And is the very life of those Vaishnavas who follow in the footsteps of Sri Rupa Goswami. There's a Sanskrit line in this verse that is very famous, and Prabhupada has quoted it also. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radhe Krishna Nahayanya. Examining Nahayanya words. Nahay means he is not, and Anya means different. So he, Lord Chaitanya, is not different than Radha Krishna. Following this theme of understanding Radha Krishna through Lord Chaitanya, I want to turn to the C.C. Adi Lila, Chapter 4, The Confidential Reasons. There.
Recording in progress.
Just started?
Yes, Maharaj. I don't know why. It's in progress.
There, three unfulfilled desires of Lord Krishna are described. The first one is that Krishna wanted to taste the position of Srimati Radharani. In their loving affairs, Krishna is the subject and Radharani is the object. So the subject wanted to taste the object, but though he tried very much, he could not. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Radharani is his tender, feminine counterpart. So she knows her own position, but he cannot know it. Krishna wanted to know his own beauty. There's a verse from Lalita Madhava where Krishna sees his own reflection in a jeweled fountain in Dwarka. Krishna says, "Who exceeds the magnificence of my beauty? I myself, bewildered by such beauty, fervently desire to taste it like Radharani." The second unfulfilled desire, that's the second fulfilled desire. The third unfulfilled desire, that he wanted to know the bliss of Radharani, which he felt. When they meet together, they both feel very blissful. But the bliss that Radharani feels is much greater than Krishna feels. So he made all attempts to feel her bliss. But he could not. All these unfulfilled desires were fulfilled when Krishna appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the mood and complexion of Srimati Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna. I was once asked by a non-devotee woman who was the wife of a devotee husband. That's a difficult marriage. She knew a little of the philosophy, not much, but she challenged me. If Krishna is omnipotent, why couldn't he fulfill his desires to know Radharani? So she hadn't read much, but I easily told her that he did fulfill them as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So she was surprised. It's so important that we know Radharani through Lord Chaitanya. Now I'll speak some verses and purports from the Madhya Lila. One verse states, "All the residents of Vrindavan Dham are like my life and soul. And of all the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis are my life and soul. But you, Radharani, are the chief gopi, and therefore you are the life of my life." Radharani is the center of all the activities in Vrindavan. Therefore, the devotees still chant, "Jai Radhe." In Vrindavan, Krishna acknowledges that Radharani is the queen of Vrindavan, and he is simply her ornament. Radharani is described as grown up, immersed in ecstatic love, and in the mood of a left-wing gopi. Rupa Goswami describes the left-wing and right-wing gopis in his Ujjvala Nilamani. He says the left-wing gopi is always in jealous anger. She doesn't become submissive to the lover, and she always opposes him. The right-wing gopi, she's called a Vama, left-wing gopi. He describes the right-wing gopi as always opposed to womanly anger. She speaks sweet words to Krishna and likes his sweet
recording
words
in progress
to her. She's called a Dakshina, or right-wing gopi. We shouldn't think that because Radharani is opposed to Krishna, that she doesn't love him. When he sees her crying dry tears, standing in a threefold position, and staring at him in anger, he's very pleased. He's more pleased by that attitude than he is when he's holding her in his arms for an embrace. Of course, Radharani isn't always opposed to Krishna. Lalita Devi does try to keep Radharani in her anger or man. She says to Radharani, don't be gentle with him. Keep him away. But the other gopis, including Lalita, often plead to Krishna, to please break her mana so she can enjoy with Krishna. And she complies. Krishna's flute also, when he plays it, can break the man of Krishna. So now I want to describe three pastimes of Radha Krishna. I want to acknowledge that I've had help in this lecture by two devotees who have done research for me. One is Manohar, who's been with me for over 6 weeks, and the other is a scholarly god brother who wishes to remain anonymous. The first pastime I'll describe is the boating pastime. Manohar was only able to find a few verses in the anthology, Padyavali, about this. In a note, Kushakrata writes,
recording in progress.
Once Krishna took the gopis on a boat ride in an old boat. The Yamuna became stormy, and Krishna exhorted promises from the gopis for amorous pastimes in return for his rescue. Radharani said, the Yamuna is very furious and water is coming into the boat, but Krishna is not afraid. Krishna said, "O beautiful Radha, don't speak harshly. We will live through this. All I ask of you is to join with me in the festival of amorous pastimes in the caves of Govardhan." Krishna stopped rowing the boat halfway across, and he stared at the gopi who had no money. She said, "Yadu Nandana, I have thrown over my pots of milk products, and I have tossed aside my jewelry. I have thrown my bodice far away, but still the Yamuna shore is not in sight." These verses are very beautiful and informative, but they don't tell us the whole pastime. My godbrother was able to find another version of the pastime from Srila Jiva Goswami in the Gopal Champu. By the way, the Goswami's descriptions of these pastimes are not fiction written by them. In their inner selves, they are all Gopi Manjaris, and they know intimately the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So their descriptions are to be taken like scripture. In the version by Jiva Goswami from the Gopal Champu, the setting is not the Yamuna, but the Manasi Ganga. The gopis go there. They want to go across and carry their milk products to sell. At that time of Krishna, the Manasi Ganga was a very big lake.
Recording in progress.
When they got to the shore, they couldn't find any boats. There was just one very old boat. And the boatman was just a young boy. He was wearing a large, long cloak, and he had a peacock feather on his head. They approached him, and he agreed to take them across. They settled on a fee, which was milk sweets. So he began rowing, but after a while he stopped. They asked him why he stopped. He said he was tired and hungry, and they should feed him. At first they were angry and refused, but when they saw he wasn't moving, they relented and gave him milk sweets. He ate them all, and then he said, "I want to take a nap, and I want you to massage my arms and feet." He refused this, and he began to row again. After a while, he stopped again. The gopis asked him why he had stopped rowing, and this time he showed them a part of the boat where water was coming in. He said, "There's too much weight in this boat. You'll have to throw over your milk products in the pots." The gopis were shocked, but but they immediately threw over their pots of milk products. He then said, "The boat is still too heavy." You have to throw over your jewelry. Reluctantly, they threw off their jewelry. Then he said, "It's still too heavy. Now you have to throw off all your clothes." They were infuriated by this suggestion, and they threatened him. So he continued to row. But then dense clouds came over the sky, and the water got agitated. To assure them, the boatman began to rock the boat, showing them how sturdy it was. But Radharani panicked. She thought she was going to drown. So she ran forward and put her arms around the boatman for protection. When she did that, she understood that the boatman was none other than her dearmost Krishna. So she was in ecstasy. Then the storm stopped, and the waters calmed down, and the moon appeared in the sky. The gopis asked Radharani about her behavior. Why was she embracing this boatman? She reached under his big cloak and pulled out Krishna's flute. Then they all knew that the boatman was none other than the prankster Krishna. Krishna then took the gopis on a wonderful boat ride around Manasi Ganga and stopped at all the islands. So this pastime has a wonderful, happy ending. Next, I'll tell the pastime of flower picking. One time, Krishna learned that the gopis had entered Vrindavan forest and were picking flowers, leaves, and twigs. He became angry and approached them and spoke arrogantly, "My dear thieves, why are you picking flowers, etc., from my garden?" Lalita answered, "If you pay a man and employ many workers and build a garden, then it is yours for life. But you didn't build this garden. So why do you claim it is yours?" Krishna said, "It is known throughout the Vedas that this garden is named after me. It bears my name." Radharani said to him, "If this garden bears your name, then why is it known all over the world as Vrindavana, named after our dear friend Vrindadevi?" Krishna said, "Vrindadevi, who is more beautiful than goddesses of fortune, is my chaste wife. I swear it. If you don't believe me, ask her." Brinda Devi became red with pretended anger. Radharani turned to Brinda Devi and said, "Is this true?" "It's not true. Well, if it was true, you would have left our company in anger. Now we have caught this liar." Brinda Devi then spoke to Krishna, "You eunuch of Shaivya, if you want a garden, then you should go to Shakistali and worship Chandravali. If she's satisfied with you, then she'll give you a garden of jujube trees." Brinda Devi then began to praise Radharani. She made a very long prayer describing Radharani's beauty, her bodily limbs, her face, etc. And she compared her in metaphors to beautiful things in nature. And she said that Radharani surpassed the beauty of all these objects. She went on and on and on, composing a beautiful prayer. When it was over, all the gopis were ecstatic, and they embraced Brinda Devi and threw flowers on her head. Krishna was also very satisfied with the prayer within, but externally he laughed and spoke some mocking words. He said, if Radharani really eclipses Vrindavan, then why does she stoop to pick a tiny flower from Vrindavan? She is a confirmed thief and is always hankering after other people's possessions. Krishna can't give up this idea that the garden is his. Radharani then says to Krishna, "This garden belongs to Brinda and it's called Vrindavana. You are making false claims." He becomes angry with them because they're insulting him, and he goes forward to attack them. He's very arrogant and aggressive. He glances at the belt and bodice of Radharani and he says, "I think you have hidden some flowers in your clothes." He focuses on her belt and says, "I believe you have hidden the flowers under that belt. Please open it and let me see." Tungavidya then says, "This is too much. We have tolerated your activities up to now. But now asking us to undress is beyond the pale. We have no recourse but to take your flute and break it into pieces. Lalita is enjoying all this talk. But nevertheless, she rebukes Krishna with harsh words. She says, "Break, liar, Radharani is superior to you in every way. Now she's displeased with you, and she's going to burn you to ashes with her anger." Kushakrata, the translator, makes a note that at the end of this verse by Lalita, the Sanskrit has a deliberately ambiguous meaning. And instead of "Radharani is going to burn you to ashes," it can be taken as Radharani is inflamed with amorous desires. She's more agitated than you are. In these plays, there are many double meanings in the Sanskrit. What they seem to be arguing, they're actually expressing amorous desires. At one point, one of the gopis even says to Lalita, "Please don't speak so harsh. Let us listen to the dialogue between Radha and Krishna, which is filled with ecstatic love." But Krishna becomes angry at these words of Lalita. And he goes forward and says to Radharani, "Why don't you leave these mad girls and come with me in the cottage and give me the mercy of your amorous love?" She says to him, "Why don't you stop your joking words and go back to your place and play the buffoon with your comedian friends?" They go on and on like this, quarreling with no let up. Then Raghunath Goswami has an abrupt ending to the play. I must admit that I preferred the happy ending of the boating pastimes. It will take me years or maybe lifetimes to appreciate the rasa of why he ended this play so abruptly. But I'll read it to you. As Radha walked, her anklets tinkling, Sri Krishna, the lifter of Govardhan Hill, ferociously attacked her breast with his hands, just as a powerful lion from the King of Mountains might attack with its claws the bulging frontal lobes of a regal elephant. And then Krishna's playful and splendid flower quarrel pastimes are filled with the sweet fragrance of the joking words of Radha's feet. The dust of the feet of the incomparable Srila Rupa Goswami is the goal of my life. Thus ends the composition of Srimad Raghunath Das Goswami's Sri Sri Radha Krishna Ujvala Kushama Keli, authored in the book Stava Bali. So that's it. Now I'll describe the Dhanakeli Kamudi, a one-act play by Rupa Goswami. One day, Krishna heard that the gopis were going to sell their products and they needed to cross the river. One gopi said to Krishna, "Fortunately, Harsh Lalita is here. And if you try to stop us, you will not get a single coin." Krishna and the boys had set up a toll station, and they were forbidding the gopis to pass unless they paid a fee. Madhu Mangal began arithmetic, counting up how much they had to pay. He said they had to pay 400,000 golden coins. One gopi said, "We can't afford to pay this much. Can't you make an easier way?" Then, by a combination of Madhu Mangal and Nandi Mukhi, he made a suggestion. Krishna said, "This is a very good idea. One gopi can be given as payment for the passing the toll gate." Lalita cast a glance at Radharani, and she became very afraid. She said, "Not me." They continued to argue and ask for money. It goes on and on, a big quarrel. The gopis say they won't pay. And Krishna says if they don't pay, they'll have to fight. And they say, "You're great warriors, we can't fight." He said, "Yes, you can fight." I'm going to stop speaking here and read the end of Dhanakeli Kamuni, which is a wonderful ending. Up to this point, it's all chaos. Then suddenly, Purnamasi enters. Purnamasi is an elderly gopi with white hair. She is very wise, and she's very favorable to Krishna. The girls all respect her and worship her, and they do whatever she commands. So when she enters, Radharani says, "Noble lady, now that you have come, we can see by God's grace the Father shore of this ocean of sufferings." I'm reading, but I'll try to read dramatically so you don't get bored. Please pay attention. Then Purnamasi says in an aside to Radharani, "O girl with the slender waist, you agitated, sharp-tongued, inflamed with pride girls, eager for a quarrel, stubbornly refuse to pay this toll to the king of toll collectors, a king who rules as the only god, capital G, in the whole forest circle, why would you not have fallen into an ocean of sufferings? As long as he does not get his beloved, Krishna will remain stubborn and arrogant. Nandamukhi says, noble lady, please order us. Which of us must bear this burden? Purnamasi says, the girl among you five who is the most able to please him should be given to Krishna. Slightly smiling, Nalita casts a sidelong glance at Radha. Worried Radha clings to Vrinda's neck. Vrinda says, O noble lady, Purnamasi, the slender-waisted girl says, O all-knowing one, the girls gave wonderfully clever Lalita the task of protecting them in this grave danger. O noble lady, Lalita now stands before you. She awaits your order. Lalita, smiling, when the jewel of the heart is already taken, what is the use of any further struggle? Purnamasi says, what Lalita says is not wrong. Radha speaks up, noble lady, please be kind, be kind. In this dangerous situation, don't make this frightened, gentle person become a toll payment placed in the hands of that harsh tax collector. Why do you wish to throw me to him? Pretending to weep, she throws herself at Purnamasi's feet. Purnamasi embraces her in her arms. Child, don't cry. All will be good at the end. Krishna says, noble lady, I am truly fortunate that you came at this, the right moment. Krishna says joyfully in an aside, by good fortune, Purnamasi has given Radha as the payment of the toll. Then openly, noble lady, only by walking on the path of your mercy have I found this jewel of a beautiful girl, a jewel effulgent with the moonlight of sweet and passionate love. There is no other way I could have found this jewel. Purnamasi, with a playful smile, O king of gentle boys, I think of her as a Chintamani jewel, but to you she is a jewel of a beautiful girl. Krishna, bashful, now my words may rest from their efforts. O Nandamukhi, O companion of noble Purnamasi, it is by your wise counsel that I have attained the touch of the most beautiful of all girls. Purnamasi, with a playful smile, now your destiny is fulfilled. The girls say, we have given you the toll payment you desire. For now, please allow us to go to the yajna. Purnamasi said that. Krishna, bashful, as the noble lady commands. Purnamasi, O personification of all bliss, although these pastimes are very pleasing to my heart, there is one thing I wish to ask of you. Krishna, delighted. Noble lady, command me at once. What may I do to please you? Purnamasi, a request made at the right moment will always bear its fruit. Therefore, I now ask, O playful friend, O jester Krishna, please enjoy glorious toll pastimes with Radha and her friends in this place eternally. Also, O Krishna, whose graceful steps and glistening playful sidelong glances fill Vrindavan forest with glory, please make fruitful the tree of desires that grow from persons who, renouncing all other work, live in a cottage in Radha's forest and yearn to serve you and Radha directly in this holy place. Krishna, happily agreeing, noble lady, so be it. So Purnamasi made two requests, that the toll gate pastimes, where they're arguing, should go on eternally. And then secondly, those persons who live in cottages and desire direct service to Radha and Krishna may serve them directly. Krishna says happily, so be it. Come, let us each go to his own duty. Exit all. Epilogue. May this flower garland of a one-act play, a garland I created on his order, decorate for a moment the neck of my dear friend. Staying on Nandi's Far Hill, I wrote this one-act play in the year A.D. 1549. Thus ends Sri Dana Kevi Kamudi. Radhastami ki jai. Sri Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol. Thank you.